time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. That is the voice of Paul King, who has been working with me in this podcast forever. We also have added Nikki Whitaker, so thank you to both of them for doing all the behind the scenes. And Paul's voice does the opening there, so I've got to give him a shout out there. But welcome, listeners. Good to have you with us. It is Monday, May 3rd, 2021. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And of course, we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. And today, we've got another podcast with some really good information. Yes, we start off the first half of the podcast with just an update on the industry, and then we go to the hot topic segment. And we're really looking forward to, again, another really informative hot topic. Joining me is a dear friend, Linda Bomar. Also joining Linda with Rachel Harris. Linda is Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Indicom, and Rachel is Vice President of Product Management. And both are serious mortgage professionals, and we're just so thrilled to have them on. Indicom is a sponsor, but folks, they have got some interesting things going on that'll help reduce costs and really focus in on what you can do to automate your middle office. So stay tuned and hear some great information about what you can do. I tell you, automation is changing our world so quickly, changing the mortgage world. So let's say a special thank you to the Industry Syndicate for what they do. We're so pleased to have the relationship that we do with the Industry Syndicate. Check out all the podcasts you can see at industrysyndicate.com. Also want to give a couple of shout outs. Amy Moses, who used to be with ICE, used to be with MERS, is now with SnapDocs, and we're having some really good conversations and learning about what they do. Got to check out SnapDocs.com. They're not a sponsor yet, working on that. But anyway, really pleased to have them here. But Amy, congratulations on landing with what looks like a really good company with a really exciting vision. Also, I want to say a special shout out to Sanat Mohanty, and he is with Vault Edge. He wrote me and says how much he enjoys the podcast. So many of you that write and share your comments with me. I try to fit as many of these in the podcast, but thank you all of you who text me, write me, and let me know how much you enjoy the guest. And I know there's others out there that wrote me, so if I didn't get your name mentioned, I apologize. I want to say thank you to our sponsors. The Mortgage Bankers Association of America do a great job of helping our industry have our voice heard on the Hill. They also do so much of the way of training. The MBA, how can you be in this industry and not a member of the MBA? You need to be. And so Tricia Megliazzo, my good dear friend, will help you get signed up. But you can have your voice heard, even though you're not an MBA member. You should be. So check out MAW, or the Mortgage Action Alliance app, in your app store. Download it and make sure you get signed up so you can take what the MBA is pushing out on the Hill and we can have our voice added to it. Also, Finastra Fusion Mortgage Bot Solution does a great job helping their clients manage, store, retrieve, and deliver loan files in an electronic way. And moving over to a completely paperless environment. Do a great job on that. So thank you to Finastra for their leadership in automation and their sponsorship. Also, Lenders One and Mortgage Collaborative. Both of these entities are co-ops that do a great job of creating more of a smaller, intimate atmosphere where you can get together with people that's your size and get into a smaller association with them and conversation with them. Again, they do not replace the MBA. I stress that every time, but they are great for getting up close and personal with your peer group, as well as the lenders and vendors that are a part of the organization. Check out both of them, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Also, CMLA, Community Mortgage Lenders of America, another organization that does a great job within the industry, as well as Indicom, who is our guest today. So special thank you to Indicom, providing solutions at every stage of the mortgage life cycle, and including automation, outsourcing, and compliance. Also, Incelerate does a great job of helping lenders engage better with their borrowers and prospects and customers. Check out the interview we did with Josh Friend, August 17th. Also, you got to check out theknowledgecoop.com. Just check out the website. Go to their homepage, check it out, and tell me if it just doesn't make you smile. Ken Perry and the group there do a great job of producing really engaging videos and training videos. So there's two aspects of the business. One's just learning management system. And then also they also have the licensing renewal. So check out Knowledge Coop, COOP, and you'll get a chuckle out of the opening videos that are on their page. Also, Mobility MMI, Mortgage Market Intelligence, does a great job of helping you recruit loan officers, as does Modex. Both of these firms do a good job of accessing the databases, giving you empirical information about what is going on with loan officers out there or realtors. And that's the other aspect of it. So it's really market intelligence. How can you live without at least one of these? I recommend both of them because they complement each other in a really wonderful way. So special thank you then goes out to Alice, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week. Unfortunately, Alice could not join us, called me just beforehand, got pulled into a very, very important meeting, and we're grateful for the time she does join us, but she said the news is really pretty light today, Dave, so don't have anything for the audience, but she used to be working with Indicom, so she's really bummed out she can't be here on this interview with Linda and Rachel. Let's get over to the MBA Mortgage Minute and hear what Rob Van Raphorst has for us. Rob, what you got?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, the CFPB delayed the mandatory compliance date of the General Qualified Mortgage Final Rule until October 1st, 2022. Transactions for which creditors receive an application on or after March 1st, 2021 and before October 1st, 2022 can be originated under either the original General QM Rules DTI Appendix Q Standards, the GSE Patch QM Standards, or the new General QM Rules Price-Based Standards. MBA will continue to engage on this issue with the goal of ensuring that the General QM Final Rule Price-Based Standards are retained by the Bureau. And according to MBA's latest forbearance and call volume survey, the total number of loans now in forbearance has decreased from 4.49% to 4.47%. 2.23 million homeowners are currently in forbearance plans. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Woo-hoo! Watching those forbearance, but those foreclosures, people in forbearance dropping, that's a very, very good number for those that are still stuck in it. My thoughts and prayers go out to you, but it's good to see those numbers dropping. And for those that can't get out of it, man, we need your house on the market. Isn't that terrible? Hoping someone gets foreclosed on, but we certainly could use the inventory if they can't make it. So you start wondering, we need to continue in these programs? The answer is no. Time to move on. Anyway, that can sound hard, especially when you're thinking of someone in a home trying to stay there. Tough, tough situation. Anyway, lots of prayers go out to them. Les Parker's here with this week's TM Spotlight and a macro review of the markets and another music parody. I can't wait to hear this one. What you got for us, Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Bonds love to go a-wandering along the sideways trail. What trails are rates on? Bonds want to go up, but notes want to go down. Add them together and get sideways. Wandering here and there, up a little, down a little. Does anyone care? Valdera! How much growth room does the economy have without accelerating inflation or creating bubbles in the capital markets? The Fed sees blue skies above, and bonds see the black forest ahead. Valdery! Valdera! Will bonds wander forever? One more time! These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Oh, yeah, of course. Got to give a round of applause on that one. Gary Cantrobone and Les Parker teaming up. Man, I haven't heard that song. I can't even remember, but I remember that growing up. That's so funny. Les, great job. Great information. And actually, very accurate. Also very accurate is the information that you can find on mbslive.net. And we have the founder and the awesome CEO of MBS Live with us, Matt Graham. Sorry, that sounded a little game hostish there, Matt. What's happening?
So, yeah, we have some allegedly accurate info on MBS Live, and I have some info allegedly for you on a quick rundown of what went on last week, but we'll focus more on what's coming up ahead. And yes, bonds are wandering, according to Les, and he's right, and we'll talk about how much they might wander and what that range looks like. But that's definitely the theme, and that's really the thesis. So as far as last week was concerned, we came into it at, well, the previous week, yields were as low as they'd been in a long time, more than a month. Nice push back against the rate spike that has defined most of 2021 so far. But right out of the gate, we started weakening two back-to-back weeks where 10-year yields had bounced at almost exactly 1.53. And so that is a technical level of some significance at this point, and it helps us to find the lower end of the range in the near term. So the week was really spent moving up, up, and away from that. And there was a little bit of a pause right out of the gate because we had a big miss in durable goods. That's an important economic report. And it came in at 0.5 versus 2.3 forecast. And so what was really interesting about that, Dave, is that we have seen economic data be fairly well disconnected from bond market reactions. And that's been easy to explain because we're waiting to see what the economy really looks like when we get more out of the woods in terms of COVID and lockdowns and all that. But we are now seeing a return of that traditional correlation where bonds are actually moving in the direction you'd expect after they get a certain piece of economic news, as long as economic news is big enough. In the case of durable goods, it was. It gave the sell-off in bonds a little bit of pause as the new week began, but it was ultimately not enough to derail sellers' intentions. Those were most easily seen after the 7-year Treasury auction, of all things. And that's a crazy thing to say because 7-year auctions have not historically been big market movers, but they have been some of the biggest in 2021 so far. In fact, our worst day of the year was a 7-year auction day in response to a 7-year auction. And this one wasn't nearly as bad, but it was another obvious instance of the 7-year auction kicking off a little bit more bond market weakness. Wednesday was the Fed day. And depending on what you heard about that, your takeaway might be a little bit different. But here's what's important. First off, there's some crazy stuff ahead of it. We had some news media and even some analyst types talking about the potential for the Fed to talk about tapering. And I thought that was a little bit odd. They've been really clear about the fact that they're not there yet. Nonetheless, I think we're going to be hung up about it because that hurt so bad in 2013. But we really want to make sure they tell us when it's going to happen. So it was the first question again. Powell snuffed it out right away. And he further said that we're a long way from our goals. That's a repeat. As it's going to be some time before substantial progress towards those goals, and it's not yet time to talk about tapering. And he stayed really dovish throughout the press conference. He went out of his way to define the temporary factors that are going to boost headline inflation. And it ended up that the inflation reports that came out later in the week were right in line with forecasts and didn't do anything to refute what Powell had just said. So the takeaway for markets was overwhelmingly positive, and bonds did rally that afternoon. But then the following morning, after a round of super strong economic data in Europe and some positioning ahead of GDP, yields were up again. Then there was a technical break above 1.62 in 10-year yields, and we were at the highest yields in 3 weeks shortly thereafter. But held ground coming into this week under 1.62 right now. And now we have some economic data that is a much more legitimate slate of data that has a bigger chance to move the market. Right out of the gate this morning, we had ISM manufacturing PMI much weaker than expected, and it produced an obvious reaction in the bond market. As the week goes on, it's sort of a Monday, Wednesday, Friday thing. The significant data leapfrogs Tuesday and Thursday. So we'll pick back up on Wednesday with ADP employment, which to some can be a little bit of a sneak peek at NFP, the big jobs report. And then ISM non-manufacturing at 10 a.m. Analysts are forecasting that that will come in at 64.3, which isn't much of a change from the 63.7 last month. But the big to-do would be, of course, Friday's jobs report. We've seen quite a few jobs reports that haven't moved markets until the last one. The last one definitely did. And if this one comes in at around a million again, then it's going to move markets too, even if it comes in as expected, because I think a lot of traders want to see the economy put its money where forecasters' mouths are. I don't know how to say that, but I think it's like everybody hopes that the trajectory of the labor market recovery is as good as it might be. Yeah. But until we actually see it come in the numbers, we might not have traded that all the way. It all adds up to this range that we talked about, and we've been talking about it for several weeks now. This is the intermission time frame for the bond market. We had a sharp rise in rates at the beginning of the year. As far as treasuries are concerned, it actually started in last August. And now we've reached the point where that levels off. And it's leveled off at a historically interesting and logical zone, because it sort of leveled off on the way down heading into COVID, where we had a little bit of indecision. Is this going to be the worst pandemic in the history of the world, or is this going to be something that blows over in short order? And while those questions were still debatable, February, January, bonds were trading in the same range they are now, and then they broke out. So coming back in the other direction, it's a similar reaction function. If things end up being as good as they might be, then the breakout would logically be to the upside for yields, up past a ceiling of, say, 1.75. Let's call that the ceiling for now. And if things deteriorate for whatever reason and the economy doesn't heal as expected, then the floor could be, you know, 1.53 based on recent levels, but you could stretch the bottom of that range all the way down to 1.38, I feel, or the 1.3s, let's be a little bit more vague, without really upsetting the apple cart too much in terms of past precedent. Either way, the point is sideways intermission right now, waiting to see how this shifting of gears economically goes, and then the breakout should logically occur higher if things are better for the economy in COVID, and it should occur lower in yield if things are worse. Pretty much that simple.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much that simple.
We only hope. Non-farm payroll, that's going to be a big, big number. And we got to continue to hope for the numbers. The projections are good. Excellent. I appreciate it. Matt, when you're looking at the volatility, are we going to continue to see some pretty wild volatility?
I think you have to approach it with maybe a little bit wider expectation for what's normal right now. And I think that anything between 1.75 and 1.5 is a fairly stable range in this environment and in terms of 10-year yields. And mortgage rates have been more stable for that matter. So it really depends on the lender, though. I guess before I say mortgage rates have been stable, it really depends on the lender. Some lenders didn't move as much as others recently. And there is still a very wide distribution of available rates depending on the lender. Our office, 3/8 to half a point from one another on the exact same scenario. And one other thing I should mention, especially since Alice isn't here today, is that there were more kind of rumblings behind the scenes of people contacting Fannie and Freddie talking about non-owner and seconds.
Right.
And Freddie's official word is that they're going to limit their portfolio to 5% as opposed to 7% like Fannie. And that is likely to have an impact on non-owner and second loan pricing this week. And people that have those deals in the pipeline might want to take a look at getting those locked in.
Good report, Matt. Love it. Up there in the Pacific Northwest, starting to get decent temperatures. Talking to my friend of mine up in Seattle then while I was driving home last night from the airport. And he was saying, man, we got up to 57 degrees and we saw the sun for at least 10 minutes up there. Remember those days? Yeah. Appreciate you. Appreciate what you do up there for all of us across the nation. You do a great, great job. And I encourage people to check it out. Go to mbslive.net when you go sign up. Putting the code LOL in the code section, it'll get you a trial it without a credit card required. So, Matt, good job. Appreciate you so much.
Have a good one.
Alice Alves, we said, could not join us. She is super bummed about that because she used to be with Indicom and she sold her company to Indicom. And was really looking forward to joining in on the interview today and, of course, giving her a report. But there isn't a lot of news, she said. So let's get on over to Alan with the tech update. Alan Politics here. Thank God Alan is here. What you got, friend?
Oh, my goodness. So much stuff. I only have important things to talk about. How about a $40 billion software robot? A company called, David, UiPath. They're an automation company. We're talking about automation today, right? Dock automation. Well, UiPath, an automation company, they marked their market debut and notched the third largest U.S. software IPO ever in history, beyond only Snowflake, their number one company, and Qualtronics, which was the number two. Both of those companies I'm not too familiar with. But anyways, the market cap is a hefty $35.8 billion. And what they do is they automate tedious manual tasks. But the best part about it, so it's all RPA. It doesn't require any coding. So they call their automations just software robots, and they do work for humans, filling out forms, moving files, inputting data, you name it. They have $580 million in annual recurring revenue right now, 65% year-over-year growth. Margins are up over 90%. But just technology, and we'll talk about some of it today, it just continues to expand what's going on with mortgage tech. And we're going to see all of these technologies kind of start to play a part in a lot of different areas. So let's talk about some other great news. One, I thought this was great, especially last year, David, right? When we were all under lockdown, we talked so much about Ron and eClose. And while there have been efforts going on for so long, we've dropped the conversation a little bit, right? We're focusing, of course, on eClosing, eVaulting, but SimpleNexus has added Notarize, their Ron, to the eClose platform. So super important for SimpleNexus to have that and to supply their customers. So if you use SimpleNexus, you'll want to check that out. David, talking about fraud, next topic, Secure Insight and Ignite Integration Systems. They've connected to give an API integration. Secure Insights has a technology verification and closing fraud detection system. So that's now available through that API. They do risk analytics on a database of over 80,000 professionals. And why this is important is there just continues to be so much fraud. We've talked about it in the past. Imagine your borrowers finding out that they've wired information to the wrong person or someone they don't know, only to learn that they no longer can recoup that money or the house of their dreams is gone. So really, really important. And KBA is a big topic in that area, knowledge-based authentication. It's definitely a strategy that our industry needs to continue. There's a great Housing Wire article about that, making sure the borrower identifies exactly who they say they are. And there's different technology ways to do so. So you want to take a look at that. You know, on the fraud piece, this is a little shocking. You never would believe this, David, but there are underwriters right now that are actually selling Social Security numbers. They go for about $4. Yes. And information with those Social Security numbers would go for a lot more. And there are websites where they actually can post this information for sale. And in addition to that, people can buy it. And so new technology is needed and it's being stated. It is important for mortgage lenders to leverage as much automated technology to acquire information and process that information. So less information is the old way of business where documents are sent to email accounts and information is printed, and to stop the ability for people to have that data and do fraud.
I had no idea.
And there's other technology out there, David, to help better identify people. That obviously continues to grow, but the fact that if we are not digital, we put more data in the hands of the wrongdoers, and it's not just fraudsters out there trying to capture our borrowers and their wires, but it's actual people we hire too. So really interesting, but we need to start leveraging more technology in those areas. And so, David, last week we talked about the 7 essential design principles for product managers. Actually, it was a week before last because I wasn't able to make last week. And the only topic I just want to restate from that conversation we had was how to take feedback to feature, right? Really, really important. And the number one thing I think everyone has to understand when you take feedback is stop talking to all users, right? Don't talk to everybody and assume that the feedback that everybody gives you is for everybody. And make sure that you take that feedback from different areas. And so if you're a lender getting feedback from your borrowers, understand what that feedback is and what it applies to and who that person is that you're talking to, right? What are their characteristics? And if you're a technology vendor, this is probably the most important thing that you can think about on the feedback side is making sure that you know what type of feedback you're getting and from whom. Otherwise, you may run too far left and realize that there was no one on the left side to need what you created. Or you may run way too far right, right? And that's so important as we're in this such a highly competitive environment and there's a lot of tech solutions out there. So for lenders and vendors, you want to check that out. David, the other thing I wanted to chat briefly about this week was the old topic, CIO versus CTO. There's a lot of great folks out there that are looking for employment and there's a lot of expansion. Too many lenders, and I talk to a number of them every week, everybody's implementing technology. And not everybody knows the right people that they need to have on their staff to implement it. And the position of a CIO, and there's so many titles, right? You could have Chief Security Information Officer. You could have Chief Information Officer. You could have Chief Innovation Officer. There's so many.
Right.
So what it gets down to is most CIOs, okay, they're leading the enterprise through a digital transformation, right? So they're in charge of information. They're in charge of data. They're in charge of all of your systems. They're in charge of working with your vendors, the security of that data. And then when you talk about a CTO, right, the CTO is somebody that has a strong technology vision, and they're going to take accountability for how your organization is going to leverage those emerging technologies and put them together. So what does all those fancy words mean, right? That means that the CTO is going to be in charge of putting all your tech solutions together so you can get that operational lift, lower your costs, And your CIO is going to be part of that conversation to lower the cost, but also to make sure you're implementing the vendors with the right security mechanisms and fraud and risk mechanisms in place, and also helping the enterprise scale from the inside onto those. And so your tech strategy will be CIO and CTO, but all the little technology things you need to do around that technology, such as your own integrations, maybe connecting and getting data into your CRM, your CTO more than likely is going to be the visionary, the one to strategize and help you with that. So CIO versus CTO, we could have a full podcast about just that topic, but quick little lifts for today's conversation. And speaking of employment in the industry, there are so many positions open for so many great people, everything from technology delivery to user interface design, into business analysis, into software programming. If you or someone you know is looking for a position, these things come my way all the time. I'm more than happy to be a matchmaker for those. Feel free to reach out to me. You know how to get me. It's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at TMS-advisors.com, or David at TMS-advisors. And super looking forward to today's conversation.
Yeah, there's so many places I could go with all of that information you just shared. One question that came in from our listeners, does a CTO report to a CIO or vice versa, or are they equal in an organization? Is there a case you should have two of them, or can you consolidate roles? I know who's asking this question. It happened to be one of our clients. And they're considering hiring a CIO or a CTO, and they're going, now you got me confused. So a little more guidance. Is there one that's typically more senior than another, more of a broader vision?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I have seen situations where a CTO can report to a CIO. I've also seen situations where people will skip the CTO title and change it to a VP of technology, or they'll move it to an innovation title. Just because a lot of times CTOs are heavily involved on the startup side or managing a larger organization of product and technology. So if you don't have to give that title a label of CTO, you can have them report to the CIO, and they could have some of the very same responsibilities.
Good. Got back. Hey, thank you, Alan. Good information. As always, appreciate it so much. I tell you, I could ask a million questions on this segment. We just need to set up a whole day. But you actually did a good job of teeing up our hot topic segment, Alan, because that's where we're going to go next. We're talking about automating the middle office and what's Indicom's vision. So I'd love to have you stay involved in the podcast all the way out. One person just wrote, I'm new to the industry. What does the acronym RON stand for? It stands for Remote Online Notary. So we use a lot of acronyms in this industry. Probably it's true in many, many industries, but we certainly have our acronyms here. And RON is Remote Online Notary. And I got back a quick thank you. So we got a lot of new people that listen that are interested in this industry or coming in the industry that are using our podcast to learn about the industry. So I could go on with a couple of stories about that, but I won't. Let's get on into our hot topic. So, folks, that wraps up today's our mortgage update, where we cover a lot of topics rather successfully and quickly. Now we're going to move into the hot topic segment. Welcome to the Lincoln & Lending hot topic segment, everybody. We've got as our special guest, Linda Bomar, Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing, as well as Rachel Harris, Vice President of Product Management, both with Indicom, and we're going to be discussing automating the middle office mortgage operations and with a number of the technologies that Indicom is using. So I want to welcome both of them, both of our mortgage professionals. Linda, Rachel, so good to have you here with us. I've known Linda and forever and her husband, Stanley. We won't say how long. No. But they've been married for a long, long, long time. But they are one of the wonderful couples in the mortgage industry that I just love seeing at conferences and things like that. And can't wait to get back to those, Linda, so we get to doing it again. Of course, both have worked with Alice Alvey at different times. Alice Alvey sold her training company into Indicom, developed a lot of things. Some of the things we'll be talking about today. That's nice to say that. And we can say that because Alice would have said that if she was here, and she feels so bad about missing this. But Linda, let's start off with you. Would you tell us, what the heck would you say automating middle office mortgage operations? I know we all kind of think, I think I know what's in the middle. I kind of think what you want, but let's establish that right out of the gate. And then we're going to get over to Rachel to talk about what is your vision for the framework for automation. But set the stage, Linda. Middle office mortgage operations.
Sure. What is the middle office? Well, we all know we've been talking about technology a lot today, and so we know there's some great technology out there. And what we've been quick to adopt as mortgage bankers is the front end. So it's that the front-end technology that deals with the borrowers and can get the documents in really quickly. Once we get the documents in, we still process and underwrite them the same old way we've been doing it for years and years and years. Underwriters actually are the last adopters of technology, and there has been no innovation in that space until Indicom decided to make a big impact there.
Well, you guys have done a big impact. We're going to be talking more about that. So, Rachel, let's start off with getting us some insights into Indicom's vision and framework for automation. Just what's the big picture of what you're working on? Rachel?
So we have been really exclusively focused on the middle office. How can we make operations more productive for being able to, once we get that application in and we get the documents, and it's important that there's a great borrower experience. Part of that great borrower experience is closing on time and closing with minimal conditions or without getting that repetitive tasks for what goes with that. So we focused on being able to look at automating simple tasks with our Bot Genius suite to more complex tasks, such as intelligent automation with our Income Genius product, and then finally kind of bundling all of that information together into a brand new product that we released, Decision Genius, about automating decision management for operations.
Decision Genius. I love that. Is it just primarily in the underwriting area? Seems like it would be.
I was going to say that Decision Genius was actually built on two other platforms that Indicom has had in the market for a number of years, Income Genius being 2015 and Audit Genius being way before that. Audit Genius is a system that applies business rules to data and documents. So it's built on our own proprietary data extraction platform. And then Income Genius, of course, calculates income. In the case of Income Genius, though, it's more like a silo product. So it's something that can be used with point of sale with loan officers. And as we all know, there are four pillars to the underwriting process. You've got collateral, credit, assets, and income. So using our Audit Genius platform for the data and document extraction, as well as the business rules and our Income Genius for calculating the income, we're able to create a 50% reduction in underwriting time for a file.
50%. That's quite
50%.
Significant. Yeah, and this is obviously driving efficiency, speed, and things like that. What are some of the bigger comments you're hearing back from customers? And I should say this, we have introduced Indicom, who is the sponsor of this podcast, also into one of our clients. And I had some wonderful feedback from them. And I just got a message from them. And they are really impressed. And they were like, okay, we'll talk to them as a result of, you know, them be a sponsor. But you really captured their attention. And there's some of the things that you're going to capture people's attention, Linda and Rachel, for different reasons. But Linda, what are some of the number one reasons? Is it to reduce cost, shorten the time frames, all of the above? If you could have some insights as to what are some of the motivations or the benefits you're finding from your customers that are signing up for your services.
Well, of course, reducing costs and reducing the time is really important, but it also creates a new level of efficiency. So when you've got calculators calculating income, then you're reducing human error. The same goes with extracting data and processing documents. When a computer is looking at some of this, then your accuracy rate goes way up, plus you have an audit trail, and you can track exactly what's happening during the process. So the everyday mundane tasks for the processor's job can all be automated. And then when it gets to the desk of the underwriter, he or she is left to make really crucial decisions as opposed to going in and having a pencil or your HP calculator and trying to figure out what's going on with the file and reviewing every single document that's in the system. So it's kind of a lift up for you. But in terms of productivity, I said this, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago to somebody that was really interested in this product. I said, well, conservatively, we should be able to underwrite 5 loans a day per underwriter. And they have, I guess, a little late to the game post-recession. But there's no way an underwriter could ever underwrite 5 loans a day. Well, I'm sure there are lots of folks listening to the podcast right now that can remember when an underwriter could do 8, maybe even 10. So we're in a different environment now, but we've plugged all those rules into Decision Genius. And it's absolutely remarkable at the time savings, the efficiencies, and the accuracy, plus cost savings. that you can realize with the product.
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, I think a lot of underwriters should be embracing this. I'm finding some surprising pushback, and it's out of ignorance. Because when someone pushes back on this, they're not realizing that this is helping them keep the elevated salary that they're now earning. And they should be embracing because there was an interesting article in Housing Wire recently. It caught my attention. I thought about you, Linda, and what Indicom's doing. Because a lot of people are going, how can we now, with the industry slowing down, the absence of some of the refi volume that was going through there, how do we then reduce costs? Do we take it out of the LO side? Well, let's see how that works for you. Or do you want to go ahead and reduce LO commissions? Oh, my gosh. But that was one of the things that was being discussed about in the article. Well, the next thing they always turn to is, of course, the operational area. The operations takes hits all the time and are the least noisy about it, pushing back. But this is one that can actually help justify the higher costs of an underwriter in this market with the tools that you have. And that's one of the reasons I'm so excited and passionate about this. But when you're looking at how you automate the middle office, the mortgage operations, you talked about Decision Genius. Expand on it a little bit, and what other tools are you using that surround Decision Genius?
Well, Rachel alluded to Bot Genius earlier, and Bot is just, we've been talking about RPA, robotic process automation. What we have in Bot Genius, they're pre-programmed bots. You don't have to go in and do it yourself. You don't have to have a project team doing it under your CIOs or your CTOs, all the acronyms we talked about earlier. They're just pre-programmed bots that do the dumb stuff. They order credit. They review appraisals. They do anything that a bot can do where they're just comparing things, ordering things, very manual tasks. And the good news about Bot Genius is those little bots, they work 24 hours a day. And if they try to get into a loan and somebody else is in a loan, then they just come back later. Also, the ROI on these pre-programmed bots, since you don't have to roll up your sleeves and do any of the work in creating them, and then since they're held on our servers, you don't have to keep them up to date with any new compliance rules, anything like that, or something, maybe an upgrade to your LOS. We do all of that for you. Then the ROI is easy to realize, as well as the little bots. They don't charge for trying to do stuff. They only charge when they do stuff. So. Yeah. A completed task, that's when you've got something on your bottom line. And again, they work 24/7, don't take vacations. And if somebody breaks something, we fix it.
Big deal to be able to get something that's plug and play, that evaluation, that crazy number that everybody was so shocked by. It's a big project to enable a software platform like that. So to take something that you can get a couple of tasks and run immediately, that's a big deal for everybody. If you can focus around a customer instead of, no one wants to order stuff. That's not fun. That's not impactful for anyone, right?
So true. And I love getting your additional perspective on this, Rachel, because we definitely, I mean, sales, Linda, you and I, we have a high promoter score, so we're always talking about the benefits. And sometimes we hear someone with a less promoter score, like Rachel, who is just working the product management side. I mean, we just get another perspective. Just getting the depth of understanding. Rachel, talk about some of the experiences that you're having, and then get ready, my friend, Alan Pollack. I'm going to come to you for some questions. I know this is right down the middle of your fairway. You have a lot of questions you would like to ask and come to you next. But Rachel, talk about, what are you seeing for customers that are implementing this? How would you say that from a product management standpoint?
So one of the things that we've seen, and I mean, as Linda did hit the nail on the head, that underwriters are not the first to adopt. And the answer for everyone in the industry for the last 12 years has been, let's pile everything in underwriting bucket. How we've wound up with elevated underwriter salaries and being able to get through 2 files a day instead of the 5+ that used to be a thing for looking at that. So our motto on everything that we develop is trust but verify. And we come from that because none of us are native product engineers. We're mortgage bankers that put on a product hat at some point in time for being able to look at that. So will you ever have an underwriter that's going to just trust that a decision was made the same way that they would reach, or that income was calculated the same way that they would have done it? The way to improve that ROI and to let someone adopt something new is to show them exactly what's happening and let them see it. And seeing is believing, and that's really what drives adoption for operations.
Yeah, that's good. Trust but verify. And I think that brings that perspective to it, that we get caught up in the efficiency and how many more loans someone can do. But it really does answer the number one question a lot of underwriters are asking is, can I trust this? And how is this verifying the information? Alan, let's get over to you. What questions do you have?
Yeah, well, first I'd like to say, don't be too upset, not that you are, that you're from mortgage and went into technology, because that's probably 90% of the mortgage technology solutions in our industry today. Nobody really went to college and said, I would like to be in technology and in digital mortgage. So that's a good thing. But the second is, I've been a part of building bot similar, and I can't agree more. I mean, we need to leverage more of these, and what you've put together really is interesting. You talked a little bit about how technology is disjointed, but I'm really curious about Decision Genius and some of the differentiators. Mind chatting a little bit more about that and how technology is really going to help our lenders and our listeners with that?
Well, and I'm going to lean on Rachel for this too. The biggest differentiator is there's nothing out there like it. So there's nothing I can compare it to differentiate it against. I was talking to somebody the other day. Sometimes it's fun to sell a hot dog because people know what a hot dog is, and there are lots of other hot dogs, and you could say, well, mine has a better flavor. Well, with Decision Genius, it was something that was born out of the minds of our automation SVP and Rachel Harris. So let me tell you a little bit about Rachel. IndyCom actually supports every stage of the loan lifecycle through outsourcing software automation, just like Dave said, you know, at the beginning. Rachel, years ago, used to manage our underwriting group, and Rachel is the one that came up with the idea of automating income because she saw a couple of things. She saw that those were the loans getting pushed back from the sellers the most, so that hurt the most, right? Because the inaccurate calculations, so she wanted to make that more accurate. Plus, the skill sets in underwriting for calculating self-employed income. Not everybody's the same. You have somebody that's a real whiz kid and somebody that doesn't know how to do it at all. She wanted to be able to give that skill set and that knowledge across the board to a mortgage banker. In addition to the accuracy and speed and ROI costs, all of those things that we've talked about before. So a little while back, I alluded to the fact that we had some other systems, Audit Genius, which applies business rules to date and documents. So we had that system, and Rachel came up with the idea, well, dadgummit, if we can calculate income, why can't we look at the assets too? Why can't we review the collateral? Why can't we review credit? Credit's been being reviewed forever. That's sort of the easiest thing in the bucket. So she put that table together, had four legs on it, and came up with Decision Genius. And if you think about it, those are the same things that the underwriters are looking at as well.
Okay, that is the four-legged stool. Yeah, of course, Linda Beaumont would come up with the four-legged stool. We're getting some questions in on this. If we were to go with Decision Genius, how long does it take to implement?
I'm going to lob these questions back to Rachel. Time to implement's around 6 weeks, and that's a complicated reason. It's not a complicated process because we do the heavy lifting for you. But Rachel, will you discuss why it takes about 6 weeks, what we're doing during that 6 week time frame?
Yes, building the trigger points for where the push would be, because that's part of how it is less disjointed, of course, that we are not looking at something in a silo. We would want to integrate so that it is a native pool for being able to push that information to Decision Genius. That's a big win, so that you're not clicking a button to enable a process, because that makes it so that someone can opt out of that process as soon as you have someone triggering an order for being able to do that. So building and testing that information and then really aligning to your condition set. If we're going to get that pickup and efficiency that would come into play with having a large portion of the underwriting so that it's a review instead of a full analysis for what's going to happen with that, we really want to be able to clearly outline where gaps, if any, in that process, what are the places where we're still expecting a person's going to look, and really make it look and feel like yours, your overlays, your places where you may be a little bit different than what the rest of the industry does. That's really important for your teams to get the most efficiency, and that's part of the onboarding process.
Very good. Yeah, we love you. We love you. Good resist. Anyway, one of the questions just came in. We are way behind the ball on implementing bots, and we're hearing about them. Talk about how easy it is. Linda, I remember you said, referencing that, is that this is just, it's almost, don't have to do any programming. That, I think, was met with some skepticism. It sure was when I first heard about it, but talk about that.
Well, I think that if you saw the list of the tasks, maybe that would be illuminating for you. So we've got a chevron that basically breaks down the task into three different categories. Setup is probably the easiest to talk about, but those are all the things that are done when you set up a loan file. And when you think about ordering credit, I mean, that does not take a genius to do that. So let's say that you've got some real wackadoodle way of ordering credit. I don't know anybody that has that, but let's just say you do. So you say, I want that bot to order credit. So you buy the little order credit bot. And then what we do is we go into your system and we watch somebody do it. We record it and we bump it up against what we programmed. And if there's a reason why we need to tweak it, we tweak it. And we do that before we credential it and put it in your LOS. So if you think about it, it's just a little digital worker. They get a login just like your human workers do. And we make sure that we calibrate it before we credential it.
Right.
Hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah. Alan actually texted me a quick question here. Alan, go ahead. That's a great question. You just texted me. Shoot.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask, how much of the process is bottable?
Oh, I love that question. How much is bottable? That's a hard question. Alan, I'm going to steal that for a marketing flower. How much can you bottable? Or I don't know.
I love it.
Yes, I love it too. Well, we've got about 50 bots that are pre-programmed. And rather than bend everybody's ear on every single one of them, I'm going to ask my esteemed colleague, Rachel, as looking at it from an underwriter's perspective, what do you think? How much of the file is bottable, Rachel?
The bottable parts of the process are likely going to fall setup, pre-processing, veering into some processing tasks for being able to see some of that. Most of the things, once you get into the underwriting portion of the world, you're probably going to be exiting most of that bottable landscape for that and more into decision-making mode. But a lot of the steps pre-underwriting would be.
We're getting a lot of questions in on the bots. It's interesting. I think the Decision Genius listeners, you need to go pay attention to this. Get a hold of Linda, and we're going to give her contact out information out here in just a minute. A lot of questions are coming in on the bots because I think everyone's looking for those little wins, how to get started, and more people are reading about bots. It feels like an easier thing to implement to get started in this. Is that a true statement? Is that a place to start, Linda?
Yes, it's a great place to start. But in order to get the ROI, you need to be closing around 300 loans a month. I think that's a pretty uniform number. Unless, if you're doing about, I don't know, if you're doing 200, if you want to implement most all of the bots, then you're going to get a giant ROI there. I mean, when you're doing a small number of loans, it's hard to realize the ROI. Right. But we just installed several bots. What happens is, it's sort of like, it's very contagious. People go into ordering the bots with skepticism. They go, okay, well, I'll just get a couple. And then they get a couple and they're like, oh my goodness, I need the whole setup suite of bots. Once you order, if you're doing more than 300 loans a month, just dip your toe in the water. Say, I want the ordering appraisal, ordering flood, ordering fraud. Flood and fraud are the two most popular right now. So get those two and then you can see immediately how effective they are.
Yeah, there's so much to this. And the clients that we have that have truly implemented bots, the cost realization, the ROI has been far greater than they ever could realize. And I think you will start out with the amount of, oh, no, we're not the best in automation. We haven't done on the front end of this thing. But once you get there, like Linda said, you're going to want to dive in a big, big way. And so talk about that a little bit, Linda. Give your contact information. Can't believe we're already at the end of at the top of the hour. So we got to wrap this up, and I'll formally thank Rachel Harris for joining us, Vice President of Product Management. Rachel, so good to have you on here. I'm so glad you came in. And then we'll wrap it up with you, Linda, giving your contact information. How can people learn more? What's the website? Blah, blah, blah. All that good stuff.
Thank you, Dave. It's indicom.net, IndeComm.net. And my email address is linda.bomar, B-O-M-A-R, at indicom.net. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn. I think most mortgage bankers are. So just ping me there, and I'll be glad to send you my contact information. Otherwise, I guess I can give my sellout on your big radio show, Dave. I don't know if that's probably the thing I should. Yeah, 214-354-2859. I would love to hear from you, an email, anything. Thank you, Dave.
It'd be worth it so much. Linda, Rachel, thank you so much. Kudos to Indicom. I'm familiar with the company, and I've been always impressed with the management and what you guys are doing. I thought it was just an outsourcing firm, but it's obviously become so, so much more, a real focus on automation. Huge, huge company that's made a huge impact on so many mortgage lenders, like the one that Alice Alvey now works at Union Home, because she brought all of that technology into Union Home. So if you're going to be a market leader, folks, you need to start working with what the market leaders are using for technology. Indicom's a big one out there. Linda, Rachel, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you both.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Next week, we've got an old friend and one of the original voices on the Lickin' on Lendy podcast, Andy Schell, Dr. Andy Schell. He's now gotten one PhD, working on his second PhD. And he's going to be talking about some of the information that's coming out of his new mini book that he's just releasing. It's called Strategy, Leadership, and Culture. Very interesting what he's doing. I have the privilege of talking to Andy. We're good friends. We get together for as often as we can. We're both extremely busy, so don't get together as much as I would like, but I've invited him to come on because leadership is a big, big topic that we're doing a ton of consulting and coaching on, and I'm really interested in hearing what he's developed. It will stimulate your thoughts on leadership and culture and how does strategy fit in on all of that. So next week's hot topic, Dr. Andy Schell, and we're looking forward to having him. Special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Indicom, who has been the subject of this Hot Topic segment, as well as Incelerate, Mobility, Mortgage Market Intelligence, Modex, as well as the MBA, Knowledge Coop, Lenders One, and Mortgage Collaborative. Check out all of our sponsors on our sponsorship page on the Lickin' on Lendy podcast. And when you're there, remember to sign up for mbslive.net and use the code LOL. Appreciate you all as listeners. Thank you so much for the many, many notes that have come in through LinkedIn and text messages and emails. Your encouragement is really, really appreciated. We sit and do this every week and have done for over 10 years, and it means so much when we hear from you, our listeners. Thank you so much. Have a great week, everyone, and look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week. Thanks for listening.